This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Okay. I'm going to give Nathan some handouts, and if this fits you, you can probably find them on the back chair there. But I'll tell you a little bit about them. This is really a nice facility. I haven't been here before, but I was really impressed. I noticed they even equip it with lumbar support for the wall in case you need to lean on the wall. It's really great. So, anyway, so we're here to think about what makes an effective ESL ministry? No, beyond grammar and vocab. I want to take a few minutes first to share about a friend's project. How many of you are familiar with Sattler College? Okay, good. Well, I met Austin Lapp in the first year of Sattler's existence. He and some others invited me to come and spend a day teaching them about teaching English as a second language. It was a really intense class. I was trying to give them like 2 years of master's study in a day. Anyhow, Austin's a senior, and he's conducting research on effective ESL ministries, and that's what the handout is about. He has a growing vision to see Christians in America genuinely engaging immigrant communities with gospel-centered ESL ministries. So the research includes surveying individuals who've either taught English in the past or are currently doing so or are interested in doing so. So you, on this handout, you can just scan the QR code and participate in a survey. And then he'll send a summary of his research when he finishes it up in May. And he says the more participants, the better. So anyway. Now, on to what I wanted to share today. Teaching English to speakers of other languages. There's a growing demand for English classes. You know, you can enter into this for one of many different reasons, but how do you accomplish this? How do you actually begin? Well, you can prepare and then become a teacher in different ways. You know, you can get a TESOL certificate, and that might be a 6, 12, 8, week course. It's pretty intense, but they're trying to pack a lot of instruction into a short amount of time and give you some experience. It's excellent. So you can also attend a college or a university, so you can get a bachelor's degree in TESOL, or you can get a master's degree. And the positions and the opportunities that you'll find will differ depending on the amount of education that you have, just like anywhere else. I know that the thing that occurred to me was this question of where, and it was interesting how God works. I was just beginning the second year working on my master's degree. We'd come back from a trip to Thailand. It was like a vision trip, and we went through China, and as we were leaving Thailand, we had met this young woman by the name of May. She was a Karen person who was taking care of giving young people, like really young people, school-aged children, a place to live when they come out of the hills from the hill tribe people so they could go to school. And I thought, you know, I've got my good old American pockets here. May, is there something that you could really use? Is there some way that I can help your ministry here? And she said, yeah, come teach my kids English. Oh, my. So on the flight back, I told my wife, Kathy, you know, master's degree, okay. So if school's already started, and I think it pretty much has, a lot of the universities had already started up. I said, if I can get into a master's degree program, and I'll take that as a message from God. And lo and behold, I did. So second year, I was studying, and Val Yoder contacted me and asked if I'd be interested in teaching at IGO. So that was the way of getting in. There's foreign opportunities. And I think of China and Korea and Thailand right off. China has some really interesting programs where they'll pay for your airfare over, they'll give you a place to live and food to eat, and you know, when you're on, when there's school breaks, they'll let you travel all around the country, and you're paid, and that's neat. But more and more, they're looking for people with degrees, and so a TESOL certificate doesn't work with that anymore. But there's other opportunities. There's drawbacks, though. You might have large class sizes, and so you're going to have lots of work in the preparation and grading. And you could be so busy that you're hardly ever having time to build relationships and actually engage in ministry. And sometimes the government's got so much paperwork, and you're running out of the country and back in to maintain your visa, and that takes a lot of time. Well, you could short-circuit these things and just teach English right here, maybe in your own hometown. There's openings from a master's degree, or I guess you could, if you're a doctorate person too, but on down to certificates, and even people without certificates. There's a real need for people to teach because, well, there's a lot of people who are coming into our country. So the advantage of getting a formal education is that you know better what you're doing and why you're doing it. You know, you can teach, and some people are good at teaching and others are not so natural, but, you know, you can teach. But if you understand why you're teaching what you're teaching, it can be helpful, and it can help you zero in on things with your students. So, in case you haven't noticed, since we Christians are so focused on sticking around home, God's brought a lot of non-Christians right here to our communities. Some are students, but then we've got immigrants, and we've got a lot of refugees. And I read yesterday, I think, that President Biden said that he's authorizing 100,000 Ukrainians to come in as refugees. And that's above the 125,000 that he's already said can come in as refugees. The president is the one who sets that number each year. And so we're going to get a lot of refugees. And so that's about it for my thoughts on getting educated, the getting educated part of English teaching. So you want to be an English teacher. Why? Well, one thing, if you want to teach because you want to just educate people so they can be effective in their community and they can be good citizens, as I've heard one person put it, I'd say, please think again. But if you want to build relationships with people, if you want to draw them into the kingdom, into a relationship with their Creator, then I think we're together on this. There's this work that's aimed at the heart, finding and turning the heart of a person to God, to seek after the true God that is really special. And we're not talking about collecting trophies. I know there's this song that we sing that talks about laying our trophies at his feet. And I'm not sure, you know, language changes. And maybe the person that penned those words in that day and time was meaning something really different from what I think of. But if they're talking about, you know, building up trophies and then saying, here you go, Lord, I don't think that the writer's heart was in the right place. You know, people don't need to be thought of as projects, even if we feel like they are sometimes. But it really dehumanizes, it demeans a person. And if they happen to hear something that indicates to them that they are a project, that can put the brakes on things. So if you're offering to teach English, one thing that I feel really firmly, then teach English. Equip yourself to do a good job at it. Don't just invite people for an English study and then you do a bait and switch and say, well, you know, we're actually going to learn about the Bible here. But teach English. never lose track that the service that you're offering is only a starting point. It's a platform to enter into their lives for ministry. And the train does need to leave the platform. So if all you do is teach them English, then you're missing the train. So rather than teaching them English or just teaching English, we want to be more about building relationships. So in class, we give them English. But ministry means time. And that's time to show interest in them in situations in the classroom and getting to know them and their families as you're outside of the classroom. You can invite students and their families over, and you can accept invitations from them into their homes. And you can gather students together for special occasions. You can have class potluck picnics in the park, or you can take them on field trips. You can go to someone's farm, some other place of interest. You know, ministry is relational, and cross-cultural missions is very relational. There's sharing and learning going on in both directions. So find out what their beliefs are. Don't just assume. There are all sorts of different shades of belief and practice in religions. We know a woman who came to the country from China, but she's Muslim. And she was sitting and talking with my wife, and they were talking about God and spiritual things. She's very interested in spiritual things and probably wondering, what do these Christians believe? And so, well, we believe in one God. Oh, okay. Do you eat pork? And, well, we're vegan. My wife changed her diet when she had chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and we found that the vegan diet stomps on cancer pretty good. So, no, we don't eat pork. And she just jumped up. She's like, this is wonderful. You believe in one God and you don't eat pork. You're going to be in paradise too. You don't need Muhammad. This is a Muslim. She says, you don't need Muhammad. Wow. Okay, I wouldn't have caught that right off. Their beliefs are varied, rather varied. So find out about their beliefs. And in the process, you're going to have opportunities to share your beliefs and your practices. One of our experiences has been running an ESL ministry in Harrisonburg, Virginia. It began with a friend of ours at Christian Light, Lois, and maybe you all know her. She has a real heart to reach Muslim background people, and she was looking for ways to reach out to refugees. She started studying Arabic with some refugee ladies, and she and a colleague, Angela, were soon asked by a couple of the ladies if they would teach them English. So, okay, fine. They thought they would have two or three come over, but they were shocked when maybe six adults and 10 children showed up, and it just sort of grew from there. These women had to bring their children because their husbands were working, so others joined in, and the ladies' children were cared for then. So this group of ladies and children were all gathered around a coffee table, but as the students brought more friends, they could see they needed more room, so they asked the management at Christian Light if they could use some of the available space. And they had to go ahead to use cafeteria area in the newest addition that was built, and then the training room, as well as other areas. And Becky McGurran got involved, and so while Lois and Angela taught, she helped tutor and encourage a group of ladies, and this was now around 20 ladies, gathered around the teachers in a U-shaped group. So more people got involved in helping with different aspects, childcare, transportation, teaching, all those things. So toward the end of 2017, Lois applied to Sattler for their opening year and was accepted. And Lois and Angela and Becky started praying, we need someone to help carry this ministry on and expand it. Well, in 2018, Kathy and I got involved. We began to help with it and to organize this ministry effort. So as the school year progressed, we could see, even though there were a lot of women who enjoyed coming, they weren't learning like we thought they ought to once a week. So there were students who were leaving for other programs, even paid programs, and ours was free. So we decided we really ought to try to go to twice a week and maybe longer classroom times. We never did make it. COVID hit. And that program now is just history. Kathy and I moved up to Pennsylvania from being right there in Harrisonburg so that we could be near our daughter. But now there's other people who are discussing this and trying to restart the program. So it's exciting to see that possibility. I want to just take a quick sidebar here while we're talking about these things. I heard a talk yesterday, and the woman was speaking about how do we view ministry? What do we look at and say this is success? I want to have a short picture of Amy Carmichael's life. You know, Amy was born toward the end of 1867 in the northern area of Ireland, and she suffered from a syndrome that affected her nerves, and it left her very weak and achy. And that often put her in bed for weeks at a time. She heard Hudson Taylor speaking, and I'm sure that was interesting. In 1887, she was convinced that God was calling her to missionary work. And she was initially told, well, her health made her unfit for that kind of work. But she did have a friend and mentor, an older man named Robert Wilson, who she called Dear Old Man, or D-O-M. He was a Quaker. He was baptized, and for many years, he was the superintendent of the Baptist Sunday School, and later attended an Anglican church on Sunday evenings. Very interesting Quaker. He was one of the two founding members of a yearly meeting or convention where personal holiness was emphasized, the Keswick Convention, and that convention still continues to this day, as far as I know. One day the two were driving along in this little two-person carriage on a country road, and they came on a stone breaker in a quarry. And this was the 1800s, right? So there's nobody out there with the thing going, bah, 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 bah. The stone breaking was accomplished by men with big hammers. And he pulled up his horse, Charlie, and he turned to Amy, and he says, "Which blow breaks the stone?" And then he pointed his whip. He said, "Thee must never say, thee must never even let thyself think, I won that soul for Christ. It's the first blow, and the last, and everyone in between." You think about it, which blow breaks the rock? It's not the first. The final blow? Well, yeah. But we can just leave off the other blows then and just go right to the final blow. No. Every single blow that hits was intended to break that stone, and it's the same way with people's hearts. His point was, an unchurched person's journey, and a Muslim person's journey, any unchurched person, to knowing Christ is a series of encounters, and you and I are called to be Christ in this world to them. In Robert Wilson's view, we're the bearers of the hammer blows that the Spirit uses to break the hardness of heart. So we don't have to, like Amy, go to a mission organization and seek special dispensation or support or any of that. We don't have to. We can. But we can engage with people right here. And that's what English teaching ministry is about. So I think about some of our experiences in Thailand. We knew a husband and wife who, Thailand's kind of interesting because oftentimes you kind of move in together and you say, this is my husband, this is my wife, and you're married, but you're not married. To be officially married, in Buddhist Thailand, you go to the city hall and you It's very much like Romania. And you fill out paperwork, and then they say, okay, you're married. But then, of course, if you're Buddhist, you go and you get the monks or the priest or whatever to come, and you have a religious wedding as well. But they were married and had two children. And we started spending time with them and just coming alongside to disciple them. I didn't say anything. And one evening we were eating supper with them, and the woman said to her husband, should we tell them? Yes, let's tell them. Tomorrow we're going to the city hall and we're going to get married. Would you like to come? And so I have wonderful pictures of their wedding. Now, moving further on, we had a baptismal service, all scheduled, and the night before the baptism, he disappeared, and we got a call from her early in the morning. I don't know where he is. He came back drunk. He'd been out with guys that he was friends with, and they went drinking. So you have these things where you're learning and growing, and I think since then he's been baptized, and he had someone who was doing a lot more intensive member care with him, a lot more intensive discipleship. But the journeys are just so varied. We know of a Muslim woman who escaped Iraq and her husband. We see the knife marks on her neck, and she doesn't talk much about it, but she started taking English lessons in Harrisonburg, and several of the sisters really took an interest in her, and after a while she started attending services at one of the Southeastern churches, and I think she's confessed Christ now. And I heard she was traveling back to Iraq to visit family and just pray for her that she can be strong. So there's lots of stories, lots more stories that I could tell, but maybe we should move on. So, what is success in this ministry? That's something really to ask. It may be just that you've built relationships. If you were here last night and you heard Daniel's talk at the end, he talked about sowing seed. And so often, that's what it's all about. You sow the seed and you move on. And you may have a harvest that you enjoy the fruits of, or somebody else might. You just never know who's going to come along after you and sow more seed. Who's going to be that hammer blow? So let's think about this thing of engagement with your students and families. You know, you learn all you can about their culture and beliefs. You become part of their day-to-day lives. It's a really big thing. You learn about hospitality. Some of these people put us to shame. Hospitality. They're ready to do almost anything, anytime. You know, if you've come over, prayer time, you hear the phone suddenly go, okay, it's a call to prayer. So they're going to disappear, right? Oh, no, we wouldn't think about that. You're guests. We'll pray later. So learn how to ask questions, gentle questions, questions that draw them out, not questions that make them feel uneasy. And that can be a challenge sometimes. Have conversations that matter. And one thing that's really important is think about what it'll cost them. You know, especially a Muslim person, if they convert to Christianity, they've got family, they've got friends, they've got community, and they can lose all of those. So they've lost so much already, some of these people. People from Syria coming, their homes, everything destroyed. People coming from, probably a lot of the people who are coming from Ukraine are Christian. They're probably Russian Orthodox. Or they may be a Baptist. Or they could be Mennonite, because there's some Mennonite folks there too. But for some, if they've converted to Christianity, they could lose what little family they have left, or the family might be turning on them and ready to kill them. There are honor killings that go on even here in the U.S. So they'll need to pay this cost, maybe losing everything, maybe even their lives. But in the midst of their tragedy, we need to remember this too for ourselves, that truth costs. What are we willing to pay for the truth? He is the truth, life, and the way. And indeed, the truth costs all of us. So are we going to be there when their world is falling apart, when they face losing even the last little bit of what they have for Christ? Where can they turn to but you? Will you be there? Will you take them in? Maybe find a safe place for them if people are looking for them? Are we prepared to count the cost ourselves and be there in whatever way that they need when their world's falling apart? The truth costs. It usually begins with time, which can be a real hard thing for an American to give, isn't it? It's much easier to give money and things than time. But, you know, what about having your dinner interrupted by phone calls or late-night questions when you've had a hard day at work? Now, ministry is not convenient. Truth costs. It takes all we have and is going to take all that they have, too. The couple that we knew from Thailand actually showed up one evening and said they were running from some people that want to kill him, because he'd been selling drugs and he kept the money and he wanted to stop. So not only were they running from dangerous people, but he was coming down from being addicted to, I don't remember, methamphetamine maybe. And so he was a little edgy. And so where can we put them up? At one of the sort of empty places that I go has? No. Okay, they can stay in our house. Said that like a Canadian. They can stay in our house. And so we just got some mattress pads and we put them in our living room, and there they were for a number of days. Family of four. It's very interesting. We enjoyed cooking things together. But it was inconvenient, rather. Truth comes at a price for all of us, but we were bought with a price. So I wonder, you know, can we take a card and write on it these words, "Lord, I'm yours to do your will, any time, any place, at any cost," and sign it? It's just between you and God. What is Jesus' demand on our lives? He gave all for us. Are we willing to give all for him? So, in the end, I'd say it's easy enough to teach English, but beyond English teaching is a whole world of relationships and possibilities, and that's where the work is, and that's where the joy is. So, just wondering if there's any questions that you'd have. Sure.
Yeah, so what would you recommend if you're teaching a class that's very basic English skills? There's almost a limit on the relationship right there. Do you have experience with teaching beginners?
Well, I have experience working with beginners because our church has adopted a refugee family from the Sudan, and they're at pretty much zero. And it's interesting, other people too have had this, okay, Google Translate, Arabic. But when they speak Arabic and it comes back as English, I look at it and go, again? Because sometimes it says weird things. And I don't know if it's just the way that they pronounce things or if they're speaking in a different vernacular of Arabic, because there are many different versions. So, and It's interesting because we met someone who said she teaches a more advanced class, but her sister teaches the beginners because you got to be a really good teacher to teach the beginners. There's some truth to that. There are some language learning things that we learned, and I'll be speaking about that at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock. And there is a really nice little booklet full of all sorts of survival phrases and things like that. And I was just thinking to tell the folks here in Lancaster who are teaching English, they're doing a great job. But one thing, especially for beginners, that would be good is start teaching them phrases like, what is this? Did I say that right? And there's just a whole range of things like that, because once they have these phrases, then they can start learning themselves. You teach them not to be students, but to be learners, because there is a difference. You know, students, they're led by teachers, and they're sort of at the mercy of the curriculum and the teacher and everything, and they're not really in control. But a learner's in control, and the learner will say, what do you call this? You know, my name is Duff is good, then that's a great start because people want to meet people. But you have to go beyond. You know, Joyce is in the kitchen. How do I use that? How many times am I going? But, you know, what is this? What are those? What's this here, there? You know, all these different questions, they're good. Yeah, it is a challenge when you're at ground zero with language. Is that halfway enough?
Yeah, I don't mean to extend the question too much, but can you talk about the part of having a relationship with them and wanting to go more than just teaching English? Because in my experience, it's hard.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's when you take time to sit down with them or ask them how they're doing, and I know that's even hard when they're at zero. But there's got to be something, you know, as a teacher in most cultures, you know, teachers are like way up there, you know. So in Thailand, you know, if you're the student, when you greet the teacher, it's kind of like this instead of like this. This denotes what your importance is. So if you're like the king of Thailand, it's like this. And, you know, if you're a lowly whatever, you know, you greet them like that. So as a teacher, you know, somebody's going to greet you about like this, and, you know, you can return the greeting wherever. But you have that power of being the authority, being the teacher, and knowing, even if you feel like, wow, I'm really lost, I just don't know quite what to do, they don't realize that. And so you're still up there pretty high. And so just trying to talk with them about things and asking them about their lives, even if it's just a few minutes. And as their language improves, then you'll have more opportunities. But since we were involved in the sponsorship, we showed up the first evening when they arrived in Lancaster, and we brought them groceries, and, you know, we ferried them around to English classes and helped them with filling out forms and all sorts of stuff like that. And that's pretty tough with no English in common. So you may have to, but I would say try to keep them away from, as soon as they retreat into their heart language, then, you know, their learning's just going to fall off. And especially another thing is to give them something on their phone. You know, help them to take their phone and just do a video of you, you know, saying the words and looking at the words and saying the words and looking at the words, and so they can play it back over and over again. Those kinds of things are really helpful. It extends their practice time. Other thoughts or questions? Yeah.
What's a good ratio for a thing of teaching them your language, like English, versus learning their language?
Wow. I really understand that because we moved to Reading, and we're in the middle of a bunch of people from Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico, and I've never studied Spanish. You know, I can speak Romanian and Thai, but no hablo español. So, you know, I've got to start studying this language. You know, we learned Romanian when we were 40. We learned Thai when we were 50, and that's a tonal language. It's a little harder. And so now that we're in our 60s, Spanish, I guess. So it's good that it's an easy language. But yeah, trading language, that's a tough one because, you know, you want to form this relationship, and it's neat to trade languages back and forth. But, yeah, I would try to stay away from using their language as much as you could. But, yeah.
I was thinking mostly about if, for example, I'm an English teacher in a third world country, and everyone around me is speaking one language, like Swahili or Spanish.
Right, okay.
Not like I'm in a city where there's three different languages floating around.
Sure. Yeah, well then, you need to be a full-time language learner and direct your education.
So should we put more effort into learning their language or teaching English?
Wow. If you're a guest in the country, I would think you want to be good news. Being a teacher, that's good. It makes sense in their eyes. You're here to teach English. And yet, being a learner of their culture and their language is huge. Because, well, you know, it's really neat when somebody wants to learn your language, right? We met a Thai girl at the emergency room for the hospital here at the lab, and she said she's been here in nursing school 2 years and no one spoken Thai to her until the evening that we came in and spoke Thai to her. I just said, you know, you look like you're Asian. She said, I'm from Thailand. And my wife, you know, immediately in Thai says, oh, you speak Thai. And she's like, oh, yes, I speak Thai. And then we're talking Thai. But it's really big for the people where you are. And yeah, teaching English is a ministry. And yet if you're in a foreign land, there's going to be a whole lot more. The students, yes, they want to learn English, but you know, they're probably feeling kind of like, well, he's here in our country and he ought to be learning our language too. And that shows that you care about them, just that you're spending that time to learn the language. So, yeah, in that case, I would say, boy, yeah, you know, prepare your lessons, but beyond lesson prep and making sure everything is ready to go, the rest of your time, you should see New Tribes Mission's language learning program. It is intense. They're talking about learning, like, 50 new words every day. Every day. It's just amazing. Other questions or thoughts? Okay, well, it's been good to be here. And if you think of anything else and you see me around, just grab me and ask.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.